So, this is the first morning of our four-day retreat and the first talk. Forgive me, I didn't catch this. On the schedule, it says that the retreat is called The Four Mind Seals of Dharma. This is not The Four Mind Seals of Dharma. This retreat is called The Fundamentals, The Four Seals of Buddhism. So just in case anybody has come to the wrong retreat, just want to, you know, I have the Buddha watching me here, and I'll go, what is this about the four mind seals of Buddha, of Dharma? And actually, there are mind seals, but that's a different way of looking at it. So the first mind seal has to do with impermanence, anicca. Now, as I said last night, there are many of you here who have been around Buddhism decades, practicing, you know, or reading. People have been here for decades. Anyhow, you can't stumble into Buddhism without hearing about impermanence. So I would imagine everybody here, if I asked, you know, everybody know what impermanence is, everybody here would raise their hand. Is that true? Everybody know what impermanence is? Everybody's heard, right? And even people who've never even heard of Buddhism, if you said to them, well, everything changes, you know, they'd say, of course everything changes. So the question becomes, why did the Buddha say that impermanence is the most important teaching I give? Very interesting, right? He didn't just kind of skip over it, right? You heard him say that it is the elephant's footprint, which is the largest footprint in the jungle, right? Most noticeable. He said that is impermanence. It has the largest footprint of anything in this world. And yet we don't see it, right? So why are these people in the back have these things in their ears? Because of what? Impermanence. Why is Brian downstairs taking care of a machine? Because of impermanence. You know, the mark of impermanence, most significant. The seals, the idea of a seal, you know, why they're called the four seals. You know, it's like a seal is like a stamp, you know, it's like an ancient thing, it's like a stamp, right? Or like, you know, the nobility, the king seal, you know, when it was stamped with the king seal, you know, it was most important. Okay, but also sort of the whole idea of sealing, you know, how we seal an envelope, it's like, you know, when we seal something, we're finished with it. Done. Impermanence is the seal of existence, the most important seal there is. I think the death and dying, which of course is class last week, which of course has to do with impermanence, you know, and I've said it before, it is only the recognition of impermanence that we have the Buddha. That is the only reason, or I would say the primary reason, right? Because before he looked like that, he was just, you know, just a young guy enjoying his life, right? Had the pleasure, the youth, the status, anything anybody could want. And for most people in our society, including those of us here, that is what we think, you know, that's our object in life, right? If I could just stay young and healthy and have lots of nice things and have lots of pleasure in my life, and, you know, right? I mean, that is the goal. of life. I would say for what? 99.9% of the population? I mean, that's not well researched, but I think it's fairly significant. But it was only when he saw the impermanence of his life, right? When he realized that all bodies get sick, all bodies age, and all bodies die. That was the most significant moment of his life up to then. And it turned him around, we might say. And it made him look at life, his life, and the life of those around him in a radically different way. So radical that he what? He left it. You know, there had to be something else. And of course, you know the fourth experience he had after the first three with impermanence was he saw, we don't know, some kind of recluse, some kind of hermit, some kind of somebody, you know, walking through the town, and the person, you know, seemed very serene, right? And he asked his chariot driver, you know, who's that or what's that? And they said, oh, that's a recluse or a mendicant or something. Yeah, they just devote themselves, you know, to spiritual practice, meditation, and they have no possessions. Right? They have no possessions. They just, you know, have their little bowl, and you know, that's why he left, you see. Because if you just had the first three, you could what? You could despair. Wow, this life is pointless. Right? You know, I mean, what is it all up to if you have to leave everything? You know, why take care of your body? It's only going to die and get sick and old. And you see what I'm saying? It could lead to nihilism. It could lead to hedonism. You know, which again, you can see this is our country. You know, it's like sensual pleasure, sensual pleasure, sensual pleasure, sensual pleasure. Right? That's what life's about. More and more pleasure. So, you know, you can see that the choices in the face of impermanence were not very satisfactory. And yet you see they are the paths that most people take. But when he saw the recluse who was at peace, who had serenity, and didn't have anything, you know, this kind of let him know that there is another way. There is another way. One can live in this life, in the midst of this life, and have peace and serenity without dependent on things, including the body. In Buddhism, we call things phenomena. Things. So there are four Dharma seals. We'll just, today we'll deal with this first one. Most important one. All composite phenomena are impermanent. Could you write that up on the board? This will be our watchword today. We'll talk about it now. Make sure by the time we end this morning, everybody understands how to practice today. All composite phenomena are impermanent. So this is the first, you know, seal, mark of existence that the Buddha taught. And he instructs us to meditate on it. Not just, you see, it's the easiest thing to go, oh yeah, I get it. Everything's impermanent. What's the second one? You see, probably already people are going, all right, well, what's the second one? You know, I gotta get it. Yeah, no, we need to meditate, reflect deeply on this. Because if we don't, we will not get the benefits. We will not become like the Buddha. energy and enthusiasm to achieve true serenity, true peace. You know, so there may be people in this room who have, again, been exposed to these teachings for years and wonder why they don't really get anywhere or don't get too far. It's because, you know, we only pay lip service to this. We haven't really contemplated it, reflected on it, and really be willing to see it in sort of the way I'll talk about it today. So in terms of phenomena, right? So composite phenomena means anything that is produced by causes and conditions, right? Is phenomena. Anything that is subject to cause and effect is phenomena. Right? Composite phenomena, right? It's things that are composite. They're not just one thing. So he's talking about all composite phenomena are impermanent. What's composite phenomena? Everything. Now, you can look at composite phenomena in two ways. There's the phenomena, we might say, of the external world, and there's the phenomena of human beings. All right? And it's not that hard to see, is it? Right? So, you know, it's not that hard to see that what? That, you know, if you study and geology, you learn what? About the history of the earth. What? Changes, right? Changes. All these different ages, right? If you study, history of the weather over the millions of years, what do you learn? Changes. Right? If you study forms of life, what do you learn? Endlessly changing. Right? If you study human history, what do you learn? Right? Where is the Roman Empire? Right? They're now Italians, you know what I mean? I mean, look, you see? Nothing against Italians, but I mean, you know, where's the Roman Empire? It's okay, Maria. It's okay. You know. Where's the Greek Empire? Right. Where's the Mesopotamia? You know. Where are these great empires? Where are they? The British Empire, where are they? Gone. Or changed. Not gone, but they're changed, right? Everything changes. Nothing. Because why? Because all those empires. You see, when you read the name empire, it looks like it's a thing. The Roman Empire. There was never a thing called the Roman Empire. They were just a bunch of people who had come together because of causes and conditions, you know, and were able to impose their will on other people because of causes and conditions for a short period of time. But there was no thing called the Roman Empire, just a name that was given to causes and conditions that had come together. You know, you see what I'm saying? And we create these stories about the Roman Empire. I mean, you can't see the Roman Empire, can you? Why not? Anybody go looking for the Roman Empire? The Greek Empire? Why not? Why can't you find any trace of it? What? Because it's gone. Because why is it gone? Because it never really existed in any real permanent way. It was just the coming together of causes and conditions. Like the weather. Like the climate. Coming together of causes and conditions. And everything that comes together because of causes and conditions is impermanent, is subject to cause and effect. The opposite of impermanence is what? Permanence. Okay. Deluded people believe in what? Permanence. believe these things are solid and will last forever, or at least as long as they want them to last. Right? So, I mean, I could go on. Is that clear? I mean, you could, you know, science and history will explain, and geology and everything will explain impermanence, right? In the external way. Right? It is endlessly subject to change because that is its nature. It is marked. All composite phenomena are marked with impermanence. It is impossible for them to stay stable because they're not permanent. They're just a collection of things, of parts. And all those parts are coming together just temporarily because of causes and conditions. Is that true? This building, right, which appears solid, it's only the coming together. Right? I mean, watch a building being constructed over there. What are they doing? They're just bringing parts together, right, and putting them together. And all of a sudden, a building appears. And we look at the building and we think, what? It's solid. It's real. It's permanent. But you see how limited our view is. I hate to tell you, it's all that work ultimately for naught. Is that clear? I mean, this has to be reflected. I mean, I'm saying these words and everybody's agreeing, but no, we don't get it. Because in the face of change, we what? We suffer. Why do we suffer? Because we believe in permanence. We don't believe in impermanence. We don't believe in that everything is composite, that everything is subject to causes and conditions and the law of cause and effect. You know. So you have to look more deeply because things appear solid. Right? See, there is some kind of innate problem with being a human being with very limited resources. I mean, we only know the world through our senses. So how do things look to us? How have things always looked to us? Solid. Right? Right? I look at Misty, she looks like that's Misty, you see? I can't see that she's impermanent and changing and dying and aging and subject to illness when I look at her, can I? Because I don't see it with my eyes. You see? You know, if she was complaining about something and I wanted to see what was inside her, I can't do that. I have to do what? We have to do what? What? No, I meant we have to what? Get an x-ray or get an MRI, you know, because our eyes can't see what's really there. And yet we think we see what's really there. You know, so our senses give us very limited data. It's very kind of linear, one-dimensional, right? I mean, again, I'm getting into territory that I'm not safe in, but like, you see, we hear sounds, right? But what is sound? Vibrations, but we don't hear it like that, do we? You see? So our senses are very limited. Right? Now, as I, you know, Buddhism is interesting. You know, that these great meditators could see so deeply. So they talked about macro and micro, right? So the impermanence that I was just talking about can be observed. You see what I'm saying? I mean, you can somewhat, you know, I mean, I could, you know, Misty could show me pictures of when she was a baby, and I could see, oh, Misty is really impermanent. You see, I could see that, but, you know, with some evidence. But like I said, I can't see inside her, you see. And I can't really, because she looks solid, you see. But what does science tell us about, I mean, her body is made up of how many parts? How many? What? Many, thank you, Kara. More than 100? More than 1,000? More than, you know, more than 1,000,000,000,000? And each of those parts you can break down into what? Subparts. And science keeps, right, finding more, you know, physics, more and more subparts until they get down to what? I mean, nothing. You know what I mean? It's like, you see, but we don't see that, do we? You know, we see solidity. Right? Now, it's very interesting. Buddhist meditators and Buddhist teachings talked about these infinitesimally tiny particles, right, that are in motion, that make up everything. Now, how did they know that? But that's what they said. They talk about momentariness. It's a very big concept. You know, it's like things are, you know, changing moment to moment. How long is a moment? You know, and they would just subdivide them until they could no longer subdivide them. It was so infinitesimal. You know, that's really what's going on here. But we don't see that, do we? I mean, if I said, you know, this building's impermanent, right? You would say, all right, I can, you know, we could talk about, yeah, I mean, we could take it all apart, we could take out the windows, we could have done with fire, or, you know what I mean? Or we could just destroy it ourselves, right? I mean, we can get a wrecking crew out here and then probably in the morning, right? Just blow it up and, you know, see, it appears so solid, gone, right? But what we don't see, how do those walls look to you? Solid? But what would a scientist say about matter, the solidity of those walls? Anybody here, I mean, what would they say? It's decaying, but it's also in motion. It's not solid. It appears solid. It feels solid. Again, touch is another sense organ. You see, we can't see what is really going on here. That everything is composite, big. See, we don't understand. See, why will this building, why is Misty and the building decaying? It's because really of this particular momentary lack of solidity. You know, that everything's in motion. Right? That's what's happening on the micro level. It manifests on the macro level. So this pertains to the way we perceive the outer world. Okay. We do not perceive it as it really is. We perceive it in a deluded way. Right? And because of this innate misperception that things, you know, we hear sounds, we smell, you know, that things appear solid, our senses give misinformation to our mind. You see, at the fundamental level, it gives misinformation. Does our mind know that, left to its own devices? Absolutely not. Right? So acting on that totally false information, it acts in the world, thinking that things are solid and permanent. Well, we'll just talk about permanent today. So seeing, getting a feel for the impermanent, the true impermanent macro-micro nature of phenomena is so important. Because it really lets us live in reality. Reality is how things are. Now let's come, so that's sort of the external world, which is important to understand because, you know, we are so involved in the things of the external world. So we'll talk a little bit about this. Now, the sort of inner, you know, that's sort of the outer world or the container of the world, but then there's us, human beings, who live within the container of the world. we also, and all human beings are also impermanent. Right? I mean, that's where the Buddha began, sickness, old age, and death. I mean, those are big. Right? All bodies are subject to decay. Aging is just another, it's a fancy word for what? Yeah, well, for decay, deteriorating. You see what I'm saying? I mean, we pretty it up. Aging. What? Yeah, I mean, we don't go, oh. Yeah, I mean, you know, decaying. Look at all these decaying people in here. No, we don't say that. We say what? Senior citizens. At the, what do they also say? Like, the, you know, the prime of one's life. The golden years, exactly, you know, for your golden years. Rather than, yeah, getting closer to death, dying, decaying, all downhill. No, these are the golden years. Again, that's another matter. Yeah, so sickness, old age, and death. Right. You know, fundamental truth of life. Right. For those of you who are in the death and dying course, or know, again, the meditation on death is central. I brought some stuff from Patra Rinpoche. We'll see if we get time. I mean, it is the, you know, it is in the Buddhist tradition, it is so emphasized that practitioners need to meditate daily on death. Remind themselves daily on death. And in the early stage of their practice, really devote themselves to contemplating, meditating on the impermanence of their body. So we see clearly. Because right now we look in the mirror again. And how does it look? It looks what? It looks solid. It looks real. We see ourselves, you know, just in a very, you know, narrow frame of time and space. We don't see, you know, we don't see sickness, old age, and death is inherent in having a human body. We don't see our time limitedness, do we, when we look in the mirror? We don't see the, not only do we not see our time limited and not see our death, we don't see when it's going to happen or how it's going to happen or even that it's going to happen. Do we? No, none of that, you see, because we're relying on what? To live our life. What? Sensory experience. And the, you know, that's the problem, you see, because we are misinterpreting what is seen. So without insight, without looking more deeply into, without reflecting, you know, we will not see what's really going on. And therefore we will what? We will live a deluded life. We will live a life, what in Buddhism is called ignorance. We are ignorant of how things really are. So all our choices, all our decisions, you know, based on attachment and aversion, are based on totally faulty and distorted information that our senses are giving us. Right? I mean, the freezer looked, I don't even know what's going on down there, but the freezer looks solid, doesn't it? Well, unless it's starting to fall apart, it probably still looks solid. Right. So I'm saying, so if you look at it, it looks, right? It looks like a freezer. Yeah, it's all workable, right? We don't see that it's made of parts, and those parts have a temporariness. Those parts are deteriorating. Right? I mean, if you ever want to get into deterioration, buy a new car. I just bought a brand new car. What do they say? It loses 25% of its value as soon as you drive it out? I mean, what does that mean? You see what I'm saying? It's like, they know that. You see? They know that car is deteriorating. Right? But we go, wow, let's have a new car. immediately discount the value. I think they must be studying Buddhism. Impermanence. So there is the large impermanences of sickness, old age, and death, and change, but everything is changing impermanent in our life. Relationships, are they permanent? Has anybody ever been disappointed when a relationship has changed? Angry, sad, scared? And it never happened to anybody. Why do you think that? Why do you think that happened? Because everything is impermanent. It was a coming together. It's a coming together of lots of causes and conditions supported by cause and effect. And there's a temporariness in everything. Right? Everything. How many relationships have you had in this life? Think about it. I'm going to talk about intimate relationships, you know, in your neighborhood, your family, your school, your schoolmates, you know, people you work with, people you know. I mean, how many relationships do you think you've had in this life? I mean, what? Thousands. Where are they all? How'd they all end up the way they started? Why not? You see, as human beings, we make a story up about it, don't we? So everything looks like I have a story, you know, for every thousands relationship, we'll have a story about why it didn't last. But we don't see the mark. We don't see the seal. Oh, everything. The truth is, it's only because of impermanence of all composites. That's why. That's what's going on. Endlessly going on. We are participating in where the essential mark of all phenomena is impermanence. And we don't see it, do we? So we are what? And we're deluded, and therefore we attach and avert, and from that comes all the emotionality, all the drama, all that comes from what? Not understanding that everything is marked with impermanence. Any questions about anything that's been said so far? Because what I'm sort of laying out to you is a process of meditation that each of us needs to do today and should be doing every day. Because why? Because it's got to get in. And we are so skewed in not seeing what's so apparent if you look. So we have to force ourselves to look. Right? Not to look at a Buddha's teaching, to look at reality. This is not a teaching, this is not theology, this is not philosophy. This is the Buddha's teaching that came from observing life around and within. Are there any questions? I mean, anybody having trouble with this? Not getting the significance of this? A little freaked out by this? Oh, hold on. Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. So it seems that for me and some of the people that I'm with, it's less about not seeing impermanence and more about what happens then in the mind in the face of it. I think about, you know, recognizing impermanence and then fighting against it. Like that's the grasping and aversion. So is it that if we truly understood it, there would be no grasping and aversion?
Well, let's hold off on that. Okay. Let's continue. But that's what it's all about. Right. I mean,
there are some philosophers or whatever who I'm not sure the philosopher what, you know, who or psychologists or something say, you know, it's all about people's fear of death. You know, it's like an unconscious thing. People are just afraid of dying. That's what the whole thing's about. Either way, yeah, it is key. So relationships, permanent or impermanent? Did you think at the time they were permanent? Right? Anybody ever go to a wedding? Right? Anybody ever been to a wedding? What do we say at a wedding? To a death do us part, right? Do they mean it at the time? Yeah. What are they missing? Causes and conditions, and causes and conditions change. It doesn't mean you can't deal with it and create a relationship, but it's like, you know, it's not just going to happen. There's no such thing as permanence. Because nothing stays the same moment to moment. So there is, the human being, the body of the human being, the relationships of the human being, the unfolding of the human being in their life, totally, totally marked by impermanence. Now let's look into the mind. Right? Thoughts, feelings, perceptions. What have you noticed about thoughts, feelings, perceptions? What? They're what? They come and go. I mean, which is just another word for talking about impermanence. They appear and disappear. How about emotions? Anybody ever have an emotion? Do they change? They do. They come and go. They come and go just like that. Right? You know? Somebody does something and you can immediately get what? Somebody does something else, you immediately get happy. And then you get angry. And then you get happy. And then you get angry. And then you get happy. It's like, there's no stability in emotions. There's no stability in thought. Is there? It's now 11:30. When did we start this talk? What? No, that's a meditation, but the talk started 10:45. Where's the talk? Where's every word that was spoken so far? Gone. Why did it go? Because it had the mark of impermanence. Because it was a composite thing. Words. Sound. Memory, retention. I mean, all these things. This is the way it is. Everything is appearing and disappearing, moment to moment. Is that true? Every experience you've had this past few days, good ones, bad ones, ones that made you happy, ones that made you sad, one that made you scared, one that made you angry, right? You know what I'm talking about? Where are they all? Why are they gone? Impermanence. But at the time, what did we think? How did we perceive that experience? As real, as permanent, right? And what did we do? Attached. didn't just let it appear and disappear, did we? We held on. Repeated. And yet, that experience, happy, sad, and as soon as it was over, it's over. Is that true? And yet, in our delusion, what do? What? Hold on. But even holding on is impermanent. Because if you actually, and I want you to do that, examine your mind, how you hold on. You know, pick you know, your favorite drama, you know, that you always love to, you know, go over and over in your mind. See, why do you have to keep going over and over it? What? Because it's gone as soon as you know, so you go, oh, I gotta repeat it again. But you see, every time you repeat it, it's new. You think you're repeating the old, but you're repeating it new. It's always new. Is that true? Everything is impermanent. This is powerful. You get impermanence, you'll have great, you're on the way to liberation, freedom. Grasp at things, hold on to things, attach to things. We go down to eat. Ooh, we look at the breakfast, very exciting. Oatmeal, strawberries, walnuts. Mm. Right? Very exciting. We just scoop it in as if it's somehow gonna last, you see. Right? And then the truth is, even if we found the breakfast pleasurable or unpleasurable, at the end we get to what? An empty bowl. There's nothing there. It really didn't matter, did it? And yet in the beginning, ooh, it mattered. Right? Wonderful breakfast, terrible breakfast. And then we might have thought about it afterwards. Gee, what a terrible breakfast. Where'd they get Brian from? I don't know. I have to remember on the evaluation to put down bad breakfast. Or somebody else, or the next person next to you is going, what? What? What a great breakfast. Wonderful to have Brian in the kitchen, right? I'm going to, on his evaluation, I'm going to put down. And yet it, you know, it's over. That breakfast. Impermanent. Every taste, every spoonful has the mark of impermanence. Right? And yet, even little things like that we can make a big deal about. Attachment. Please, you know, reflect on how everything has the mark of impermanence. Everything's in motion. Nothing is stable at all. Internal, external, mind, you know, external phenomena, material phenomena, mental phenomena. And yet, in the midst of this, we search for permanence and we attach and and then we suffer because of this fundamental misperception. So impermanence is big. Yes, Charlie. Wait.
It seems like in the Dharma teachings that it's implied that awareness is permanent or constant. I don't know. That puzzles me.
Don't be puzzled.
Yeah. Well, So what about that?
Even your puzzlement is impermanent.
Yeah, yeah.
But that's your own discovery. Where does that awareness is right here? You can look into it. Is there anything permanent?
If I look over my lifetime, it's always been there. But
no.
In some other.
That's a thought.
Some other people.
No, there's no. There's no awareness has been there your whole lifetime. That's those are just more thoughts. It's all past. Your whole lifetime is past. You have to look into the present to see what's here. Right? Forget about the past. You know, discover what's going on right now. What's real right now. You'll never find liberation in the past or future because it doesn't exist. Does it? Your life, your history, what you did, what you didn't do, whether awareness was there or not there. What is that? Just a story. This is what's real. If you want to discover, you know, the nature of things, just look into your mind right now. That's what I want us to do today. I mean, the laboratory, this is, you know, the Buddhist laboratory is our own experience. Okay. I mean, does that answer your question, Charlie?
No, but it seems like it's up to me.
Yeah, that's what practice is about. It's just, meditation about looking to the nature of our own experience. Remember I said earlier, you know, it has to become our experience. Right? First we get the teachings, we get the view. How to see things. Right? So these are the teachings that come first. We get the path, we get the view, but then we have to realize it. We have to practice. So we have to practice impermanence. How do we practice impermanence? Everything we see, internal and external, we look deeply and see, is it permanent or impermanent? Somebody sitting next to Kat, you see? Is that a friend of yours, Kat, did you bring? No, just got us sitting there, right? See, that's us, you see. But we don't see that, do we? We see the outer covering. You see? We see the outer covering. But the outer covering has the shape because of that. But we don't see that. You see? It's like we don't, you know, again, we don't see. We don't have clear seeing. That's really, and that's everybody, you know. People you think are beautiful, think they're handsome, or this, or ugly, or it doesn't matter. That's the truth. This is just temporary, very temporary. I mean, human life has been on Earth for how many years? Just give me a number. A couple of million. I like that, Alex. Always up for a good number. A couple of million. And our life is how long? It's like nothing. 70, 80 years, you know, on the average. It's like nothing. You know. I mean, we have to look at the skeletons to see, oh, that's, you know. I gave people the homework in the death and dying class that every time they look in the mirror this week to see if they can, you know, reflect that underneath whatever they see is a skeleton. and all they are is a bunch of, you know, what? Organs and tissues and, you know, all stuff that's kind of held in by this skin bag. Right? That's what we are. I mean, this is, you know, it's just a bag, you know, keeping everything from falling out. You see? I know some people might be insulted by that, feel demeaned. You know, but that's, you know, I mean, that's why we have skin, right? Just to keep the stuff from falling out. Please reflect on that. Not just for yourself, but for everybody else. That's what you're saying. Just a bunch of skin bags. You see, think about somebody who you really think is very beautiful or you're attracted to, right? Just close your eyes and bring that person to mind, you see? Very attractive. Very attracted. Okay, everybody have somebody in mind? Just bring somebody to mind. Okay. Now, your attraction is to their skin, to their shape, right? You don't want to see the stuff that's in their digestive system, do you? Anybody want to see that? Anybody want to see their liver and their pancreas and get a good whiff of that? We laugh, you see, but it's you see, we don't, ooh, they're like, Fred, don't do that. You're kind of ruining it for me. But that's the truth, too. I mean, the skin is true and the outward is true, but that's, you know, that's true, too. And that person that you think is so attractive, they're deteriorating as we speak. Is that not true? Not good, bad, right, wrong. Is that not true? Yes.
I think of my body like a car. So, I mean, you could have, you know, like a, it's all about who's driving it. I mean, you could have a Bentley with Donald Trump in there, and you could have a Yugo with the Dalai Lama or the Pope, you know. I mean, it depends on your physical body is deteriorating, but like when you're talking about awareness, you know, like I have awareness from when I was small, it's still now, it'll be later. There's a continuity there, even though things are changing, thoughts are coming and going, things are happening, things are going.
See, that's very interesting, the way you said that. Yeah, we see a continuity, don't we? We think there's something that, like, that was me as a child, right? And now I'm me here, and there will be a me in the future. You see, that's the way we talk, don't we? And yet, you know, it's like, it's like a waterfall. When we see a waterfall, what does it look like? What a cascade of solid water. And yet, again, that's a misperception, because actually it's made up of what? And drops, millions or billions of drops. But they're moving very fast, and they give the illusion of that there's something there, like a river, like a cat, like a Fred. And yet, you know, the way we say that, right? There are all these kind of discrete moments, and yet, has there really been, we'll be getting there, is there really a solid, permanent cat that's always been there?
Nothing physical is permanent.
Nothing mental is permanent. Thoughts come and go. Exactly. Even the I thought, even the cat thought.
Right.
You have to create the cat thought.
But you're aware of your thought.
You're right, and you're aware of all these things, but what we're talking about is you're aware that all the things that you're aware of, all phenomena, physical and mental, permanent. They have no solid, permanent existence at all, including our thoughts, our memories. They're all composites.
Right. It's all like a movie in your awareness.
Well, yeah. Well, I mean, slow down. Yeah. We're getting there. Right. But that is actually what you stumbled into, Kat, which is really the biggest one, which is we perceive the self, the I, as also some kind of permanent thing that links all these experiences, past, present, and future, to me. And yet, if you look into your mind, which I want you to do today, you know, the I thought, the me thought, is something we have to create over and over again, don't we? What? Because we don't, yeah, it seems, he's saying, yeah, I do, but it seems constant. But if you look in your mind, you'll see we're constantly having to renew our identification as me. Right? Because the I thought is not constant, it's a thought. This happened to me. She did this to me. He said this to me. Right? You see? That, you see? Try to be angry without the story of me. Huh? You see, we have to continually recreate the scenario, but also we have to continually recreate the scenario of me. Right? Can you see that? It wasn't there a minute ago, and I was very happy. Then all of a sudden I think about that. Right? So I have to do it, don't I? Even because all experiences, physical and mental, are composites. Things are coming together. And when they come together, they manifest momentarily. That's why, you know, that's why there may be people you loved, now you hate. How'd that happen? Anybody guess? And there might have been people who you hated and disliked, and now you think, well, pretty nice. Now they got to know him. Why is that? Impermanence. All our emotions, our thoughts, our statements are all transitory. They have no substance. They're all impermanent. And yet, we grasp, we attach, we impute solidity and permanence to that which isn't. And therefore we suffer. Is that true or not? I mean, this is the contemplation. You know, when you're doing the contemplation on death and impermanence, which I want us to do today, is you look at everything in this way. Everything in the external world, you just, oh, you know, everything is just made of parts. Everything is deteriorating. Everything, you know, nothing has any permanence. I mean, you look up in the, you know, and we say, oh, it's getting cloudy. You know, have you noticed that? We'll say, oh, it was sunny, now it's getting cloudy. But we're just noting what? Impermanence. You see? Because somehow when we looked up this morning and it was a sunny day, we thought, oh, it's a sunny, no, it's not a, it's just in this moment. In all we know is in this moment, this is what's happening. But do we know what's going to happen? And yet we act as if we do, and we get disappointed if it, you know. It's sunny again. Now I can be happy. Right? A minute ago, I was cloudy. I was not happy. Right? You see? It's going on all the time. In the external world, but most importantly, in the internal world, the world of thoughts, feelings, perception, I, me, my, past, present, future, memories. Is it all impermanent? Bodies impermanent. You know, can you see the skeleton as you look around the room and realize everybody in this room is dying? We're all going to the same destiny. Right? You know, the way it happens and when it'll happen will be different for all of us, but we're all going to the same place. I mean, that's significant, my friends. That's a significant piece of information. Anybody see the implication of that? Of death for our lives and how we order our lives and how we value our lives and how we order our priorities in life. This is the big one. So for all of us who think, well, I know impermanence, I've meditated on impermanence. If we had really done it, we probably wouldn't be here right now. Questions? Now, just in terms of doing this in a meditative way, when you do this kind of deconstruction of everything and you see the impermanence, over time, it becomes sort of a feeling. You get a feel for the impermanent nature of things. It's a feeling. It's like you don't, because you're no longer perceiving things as solid, permanent, right? You're just noticing over and over again, inside and outside, that everything is transitory, everything is passing, you know? And it becomes a feeling. You have a feel for the impermanence of life. The same way now we have a feeling for the solidity of things. So that's how you know it's beginning to have an effect. And in when you do it in your meditation and you sort of get to this, you know, sense of kind of everything is in transition, everything's impermanent, there's really nothing solid. And as a feeling, then you kind of just relax into that. Okay? Because that the meditation should really be a great kind of letting go feeling inside you. As you kind of get it. And then at the end of your meditation, you just relax into that kind of open, spacious, non-attached. You just relax in it. Is that so? There is a way to do this meditation that actually produces a kind of change in how you feel inside. Yes.
So to do this meditation, would you suggest that we take an object and really take it apart, or just kind of scan across the everything that comes into our?
Well, again, I think the way I've done it in the past hour or so is really how you do it. You know, Angie, maybe you could write a few things down so people can remember. So there's the impermanence of the outer world, right? And then there's the impermanence of, called the container. And then there's the inner, which is, in this sense, human beings, right? So there's the, you know, so that's that. And then we see impermanence of these two types. You know, it's called continuous, which really just means sort of the macro, the observable, right? And then there is the micro, which we talked about, you know, which is not observable. I mean, to the great meditators in the past, it was observable in deep meditative states. You know, now because of science and scientific instruments, you know, there's much more discovery of how things really are. You see, so, but it's not observable. So sort of the macro is observable to the senses, is observable to the mind. I mean, we can see things change, the weather, but really what's going on, right? Subatomic. Forgive me if you've been using words. We don't see that, right? But it's important to know because it just reinforces this sense of the impermanence of things, that everything's in motion, there's no stability. And then again, there is this, The other thing is this kind of, this kind of innate and kind of in what they call imputed, which I've sort of been referring to. Innate is this kind of, this innate belief in permanence comes from, again, the misinformation of our senses. It's not like a thinking thing. It's like, you know, a baby will have it. They'll look out in the world and they'll see solid things, you know, to their eyes. See what I mean? So it's kind of an innate misperception. Things look solid. Things, right? Is that clear? That's kind of called innate. But it's a misperception because it's really not seen that things are changing constantly. And then the imputed is like all the, you know, all the wrong teachings we've gotten, which is just to reinforce a sense of permanence in the world, the permanence of self, you know, Western psychology, you know, our whole society is based on what? Things are permanent. You know, you can get this, and when you get that, that'll be really great. Right? Because we think we're getting something that's permanent. And therefore, when we get it, we are what? Happy. And when we discover its impermanence, we are what? Sad. Disappointed. Or we have to go, you know, that's why people are just, oh, you know, what's next? Right? Great weekend. What are we going to do next weekend? Why do people talk this way? What? Because they think, get a good vacation, get a good weekend, get a good job, get a good relationship, then what? Then I'll be happy and everything will be great. And then they're disappointed. Again, we have stories how we interpret it, but it's just impermanence. Why? Because of causes and conditions. If we understood causes and conditions, cause and effect, we would understand why things are the way they are. Anybody having a hard time with this? Anybody not? Yes. Oh, I thought. Oh, okay. I don't. Your hand actually went up. I saw it. It involuntarily kind of just went like that. Anyhow, but I will respect that the head says no. Alex?
Yeah, it's just an interesting sort of connection, but children up until 18 months of age have this thing called object impermanence. And what happens is, you know, they'll look at something like a wall, they'll turn away, and then when they look back, they're amazed that it's still there, because it's like, why would that still be there? I just looked away. But again, it's the way we learn, but we're born with this this object impermanence, and then we correct it.
Exactly, which is what I was going to say.
Oh, isn't that interesting?
And, you know, when a baby is very, very young, and when mama disappears, she doesn't exist.
Oh, yeah.
And it's frightening, and, you know, there's that need for her to come back, and she does. And it's only kind of through time that innate thing that we do, the process of our learning and realizing that objects are actually permanent.
Right, but the interesting thing is, many years since I've thought about that theory, but actually that is a correct perception. Right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. When the person is gone, they're really gone. You don't really know they're going to come back. It's only over time that we develop, like you said, a story of permanence,
right,
which is helpful, but then can be very disappointing.
Yeah, it's right? Almost like it's
like when mother won't go away anymore.
It's part of the learning process that we need for, you know, safety and to, you know, to become part of the human tribe.
I understand, but can you see the cost of it? Because in the Buddhist way of looking at it is to find the safety and the ground in the impermanence, in the acceptance when mother disappears, she may not come back. When we say goodbye to somebody, see you next week, we may never, you know, we may not be there, they may not be there, right? So it's an illusion. And Buddhism at this stage, you know, this is not for babies. Right. But at this stage, this is to help us see how we've just built our whole life, safety and all that, out of an illusion. And that it's much, I mean, you know, what we're going to learn in these couple of days is even in the face of this, the devastating news of impermanence and death, remember the fourth, we can find happiness, we can find peace. There is a way, but it's in impermanence. It's in the world of change. Yes. And then we'll, you know, so lunch is at 12:30. Okay. And we're supposed to go out to work.
So it's interesting that there's been a lot of research recently that shows that animals and human beings do not actually perceive things in however the scientists determined was a real way. I don't know how they did that. But that, in fact, all of us as animals have evolved in a way that helps us survive. So we perceive things in a way that helps us survive. And you think about animals are reactionary. Human beings are, without mindfulness, reactionary,
right.
And that misperception served us, but because of where we are now, it doesn't serve us anymore. But you know, we're kind of a little up against that.
Right. So, I mean, I we could go on and on talking, but I think the bottom line from these last sharings is, again, to understand Buddhist teachings is not theology. Okay, it's not a revelation. Buddha based his teachings on reality. That's why, you know, that's significant. I don't say that to say that why Buddhism is better than. I'm just saying it's very different than most religions, because it's not religious in the truest sense. The Buddha based it on observation, both the external observation very clearly of the, you know, of the container, the external reality, but most important for us is the internal reality of experience that we have as human beings through our senses and how easily we are misled. And so these teachings are a powerful corrective. So is that clear? I mean, like, what I want you to do is kind of be obsessive about just watching, you know, watch your feeling states. Watch your pleasure, displeasure, you know, as you eat, you know, as you see people, as you just observe, just really kind of observe minutely how your mind is just constantly changing and how these sensations, positive, negative, pleasant, unpleasant, constantly changing, right? And again, you know, like we said, you know, look at your own body, look at other people's bodies and realize we are misperceiving the totality of what they are. You know, we can't see what's going on inside. We can't see the motion, can we? So, and again, it may freak you out if you haven't really done this before. It may be very disconcerting, which is good, you know, it's sort of, but over time, it really creates a very great kind of open ease in life. It's like a feeling, oh. So you're not, you just let things be. Right? And then you, in your meditation, you just relax. Open, spacious. Feels good.